What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Daft on Draft podcast. And today it is Wednesday, so we are doing Daft or Draft. That means we are giving our hot takes, or not our hot takes necessarily, because we might disagree with them, but hot takes that we have come up with. But before we get started on that, Corey, how are you doing today?
Hey, man, I'm happy to be in the seat. Happy to be in the seat. Happy to be recording week 9 college football. Just, yeah. All around happy to be here.
You know, I didn't notice this until right now, but your seat and my seat are kind of the inverse of one another.
They kind of are, yeah.
Anyways, that's not important for anybody listening to the podcast, but we are going to give two NFL draft-related Daft or Drafts here, and then we are also going to go back. We try to do a just general college football one every single week, and we will do that here as well. And do you want to start with that one? Because I just feel like talking some smack on a West Coast team that tried their hand at the Big Ten, and it just doesn't seem to be working out. Now, this is going to be somewhat multifaceted, this Daft or Draft. The first part of this Daft or Draft is that USC will go running back to the Pac-12 with their tail between their legs before too long. Daft it or draft it?
I'm going to daft it exclusively because of money. Mm-hmm. Exclusively because of money. It has nothing to do with the product on the field, because I think they would probably rather be playing in the original Pac-12 right now. Compared to what they're experiencing in the Big Ten. But I think there's too much money in these super conferences now, in the P4 now, to go back and play in a conference with Boise State and Utah State and teams like that is not something that USC is going to align their brand with, which is one of the bigger brands in college football history.
Yeah,
that's just the reality of it. You know, you go back to Carson Palmer, Reggie Bush, Matt Leiner. USC football is one of the top four brands in college football, along with Ohio State, Alabama, and probably Texas. Those are probably the four biggest brands in college football. So there's no way they dip on a P4. So I'm going to daft it. But again, exclusively because of money and branding purposes. I think for level of competition purposes, I think they would rather be playing Oregon and Washington. And they still will play those teams in the Big Ten. But like, and not having to come, and this is the larger part of this conversation, is and not having to come all the way over to the East Coast and lose in Minnesota and lose in the Big House and lose in Maryland, I think is probably the larger talking point of this conversation as well.
Well, yeah. Daft or draft, college kids don't know how to handle three time zone differences.
Oh, definitely drafting that. Like, and you would think it's different for schools. Like you would think like Maryland or some of the smaller Power Four programs, you would think they wouldn't have that kind of nutrition or weight training or like program to handle that. But like, we're talking about USC, like what are they doing internally that they don't have a program scheduled around like a sleep schedule or nutrition or how to handle this kind of travel? But again, we're talking about college kids and we're talking
exactly. Well, and that's the thing, is like, when we're talking about college kids, how many of these kids, you know, that go to USC are West Coast kids that have literally never been on the East Coast time zone? And so, like, there is a little bit of a body shock to that. Now, mm-hmm. I've done the five-hour difference a couple of times now, and there is something to be said about getting your body back and used to those conditions. And when you're doing that and you're traveling out the day before or the day of, depending on when the game is, mm-hmm. that can be tough for guys, but it comes down to something that I think maybe Denzel Burke has an issue with, is like game day like getting ready for a game day. Game day, not tradition, but routines, mm-hmm. and doing things exactly the same. And I do think that when you are traveling that far on a plane, it's hard to stay in your routine. It's hard to stay as up as you want to be. Because, like, obviously we're kind of using USC as a punching bag here. But, like, Miami went to Cal and almost lost that game. Probably should have lost that game.
Yeah.
And I do think that with all of this widespread conference realignment, Ohio State going to Oregon and getting mollywopped, like, I think that these are the types of things that we're going to see more often, because these college kids just aren't used to that amount of travel in their lives yet.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree. But it just, it also, back to USC, continues on a stereotype about USC and Lincoln Riley's football program over there as well, that they're soft.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was a big guy, and the Big 12 is fake football, and the Pac 12 is adjacent to fake football. And so then you come into the Big Ten, where it is all corn-fed offensive and defensive linemen, and you're getting your butts kicked. Mm-hmm. You're getting your butts kicked. Because when USC is losing to Maryland, losing to Minnesota, that's a problem whether it's your first year in the Big Ten or not. Mm-hmm. And you do have to wonder what this is going to do to that USC program.
Yeah. They lost to a bad Michigan football team that threw for 32 yards. Their leading passer threw for 32 yards in that game.
And it's not like it's just them either, because Cal is not having the best season in the world. UCLA is not good. So, like, a lot of these West Coast teams are having issues. We thought the Arizona-Kansas State game would be pretty good. But that's, like, what? That's two time zones, right? Because Kansas State is probably in Central time.
Central, zone. Yeah.
But that's still a pretty far flight as well. So I do think the amount of travel, these longer flights, are a big issue for these college kids.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I tend to agree. And this is kind of where we're at, as geography has kind of left the building, forming these Power Four conferences. And it does contribute to a lot more parity in college football, which is fun. But over time, I'd be interested to see what happens over time and as far as like player safety, because we might start to see bodies breaking down as this keeps up. So that might be something that I'll be keeping an eye on. But, I mean, going through all of the East to West Coast travel games, the only big team that we've seen go out West and really win is Penn State. And they had to come back. They were down 3 scores in the game. So they had to wake up late.
And that's
going against USC.
And that's a USC team that lost to Maryland and lost to Minnesota.
Yeah. So it's just creating a lot more parity in the conference. Again, if Oregon came to Columbus, I think that would have been a much different game as well. So, it's definitely worth the conversation and worth monitoring.
I agree. Our second Dafter draft. Texas A&M edge rusher Nick Scorton will not be the first edge rusher off the board from his own team. Daft or draft?
Yeah, this is sticky. This is really sticky, because I think we've had this conversation about Benjamin Morrison being a player that the league just isn't as high as analysts and media are. And now it's a little more understandable when he significantly, like, I already didn't think he was the most fluid player in the country or at the cornerback position. And then he suffers a hip injury, which it has direct correlation to being fluid at probably 5'10 and 180. Like, he's listed at 6'190. So you can see that a little bit with Benjamin Morrison, but I have heard the same kind of feedback about Nick Scorton, that he's another one of those players that a lot of the hype is very media oriented. And then when you ask people around the league about the Purdue transfer, there's a lot of feedback that states that he's getting comp pick range grades, around the league, and that he's considering going back to school. I mean, if you look at his body type, Texas A&M did ask him to bulk up. Like, they asked him to put some weight on compared to what he was doing at Purdue. And it doesn't look great. And he does have 4 sacks this year, but I think if you asked him, he wished he had more than 4.5 sacks. after having double digit sacks last year. I mean, we're now nine games in we're in week nine now. So, and then you look at the other half of this conversation is then looking at Shamar Stewart as well, who is legitimately 6'6" and 290. And we've seen a couple players at that body type over the past probably decade, 10 to 12 years at that body type, come into the NFL and play really well. Like, and most recently, Keon White. And Keon White is playing very good football for the New England Patriots. And a more lofty comp would be J.J. Watt, right? I mean, he's the legitimate 6'6", 290. But J.J. Watt, J.J. Watt is somebody that you try to avoid comping to because
he's an alien.
The most dominant player in football for 3 years from 2013 to 2016. Like that, the league ran through J.J. Watt at that point. So you don't comp people to him. But that's to say that the NFL looks at a body type of 6'6" and 290. And if you can be explosive, which Shamar Stewart is extremely explosive, and you can play inside out, Shamar Stewart can do both of those things. And he's going to go to the Indy and he's going to test really well. So it does seem like perhaps the NFL draft buzz is higher on Stewart right now than it is on Scoret.
Yeah. I hate that I'm doing this because when I watch the two play, I know which one I would draft first. And I like Stewart's game, but I love Scorton's game. Is he all first team bad body? Yes, he is.
Yeah.
That weight that he has on his frame right now is not good. When you look at him listed at 280 pounds versus Stewart at 290, Stewart looks smaller. And that's not something that you want to see because Scorton is softer around the midsection. Now, what I will say is if he is 265 pounds in Indy and he looks a lot better, which listen, guys, if he is around 280 right now, you can get him down to 265 between January 1st and March 1st. And then you can get that boy eaten again to where he maintains or even gains a little bit of muscle heading into Indy, but he can be well fed. He can lose that weight without losing muscle at his size, but he needs to probably lose that weight and show that he is committed to losing that weight and testing really well at Indy. Because when you do watch these two play, there's no, like for me, and I want to preface this by saying everybody has different eyes. Everybody sees this game differently. I see a, first of all, younger player, not by a ton.
He's 19, yeah.
But he is 19. I see a younger player with better hands, with better flexibility, with more arc rush ability. Like I see a really, really good edge rusher who just needs to fix his body a little bit and maybe turn 21 years old. Like, seriously, get him in a position to where he is not being overfed. And I think that he is a Tank Lawrence type of player at the NFL level when it comes to the technical ability that he has with his hands already. It's there. He has the arsenal. It needs to be sharpened, but showing that at 20 years old is impressive. Not to mention, he is outproducing his teammate on the edge. Yeah. So there is also that to consider. But when you are 6'6 and you are 290, and both of them are impressive on tape, I need to point that out. Like both of them against Notre Dame, super impressive. Arkansas, super impressive. But Scorton to me is just that fluidity off of the edge is something that I covet. And that's what he has. Yeah.
And that's what's bonkers to me is like, why does I don't know that big? Because
well,
not even how he plays. It's not how they even ask him to play. They don't ask him to play big.
No.
So why do you want him that big?
I don't understand that. And honestly, I don't understand why the NFL doesn't like him that much. Because and mostly because he is only 19 years old. And usually when you have that type of production, that type of athleticism at that size, at that age, I'm just really confused.
Yeah.
At where the disconnect is between the media, because the media is sometimes right. NFL teams are sometimes really wrong.
Yeah.
That could be the case here, but it just is really weird when one group sees a guy one way and another group sees him the other.
Yeah, I agree. Especially when, I mean, in this player I'm about to like make a indirect comparison to does play along the interior a lot more, but like, especially when a guy like, I think LT Overton has the same amount of like bad body. To his game as well. Like LT Overton's got a belly and people like are all on board with Overton as a first round pick right now, which deservedly, I think he does. He can win outside track even in his body, and he can run through the chest in his body, and he can play inside and out. So I do see it, but they're very similar body types, and to the point where Overton's probably even a good bit thicker.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what it comes down to for me is like, for one, why do you want two big ends? Why do you want him to play the same way that Shamar Stewart's playing? Because and then when you watch him play at that size, like again, they're just asking, he's taking the outside track at will.
And yeah.
That's like, they're not asking him to set edges.
No, they really let him attack.
Yeah. So like, why let him drop 10, 15 pounds? It's only going to contribute more to his flexibility. Yeah. He is powerful, but I don't think working through the chest is even his game anyway. So like, what happens if you lose a little bit of muscle mass in the process? Like, what's it going to do to you? Not a whole lot for the way Nick Gordon wins.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I'm right there with you. Right there with you.
Yep. Got to draft it. Unfortunately. Anyways, we will move on to the third daft or draft. The first running back selected in the Big Ten is not coming from Ohio State or Penn State. Daft or draft?
I'm drafting this. And I think this is, again, another multifaceted answer. And you think differently about one of the Penn State running backs.
Yes.
I don't think the Ohio State or Penn State running backs are as good as, I mean, draft analysts have Quinshon Judkins is still RB2, RB3 at some points. And that's
I'm convinced that we're not watching
the same player.
Well, and that's the thing with a lot of these guys, like we can only watch so many guys at a time.
Right.
It's just, there is a limit to what we are able to consume. And I'm okay if you're watching these guys and you're just like not updating your rank, like you can't update your rankings, mm-hmm. and you might have Judkins there from a preseason ranking, but if you've watched him,
he is linearly explosive, and that's about it. I question his vision. I think his ankles are extremely tight. There's not much there in the passing game. He's not patient. He'll run through anything in his way.
And I don't think he's very physical.
No. I mean, he
tries
less than 3 yards a carry against Oregon.
Yeah.
A team that Ashton Janti rushed for 200 yards on.
Mm-hmm.
So.
He doesn't have Ohio State offensive linemen.
No, he does not. So that's part of this answer. Second part of this answer is Travion Henderson, I think, is going to get flagged. I think he's going to get flagged 100%. So hard. I mean, a hairline fracture is a significant injury. A lingering injury, and you play the most fragile position in the NFL, the most short-term position in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to get hella flagged.
I do think he's the better back, though.
I do too. Especially, his pass pro is so much fun to watch him go at it in pass pro. And then I turn over to Iowa, and I look at Caleb Johnson, and I say, this guy might be the best running back not named Ashton Janti in this class for me. I legitimately think that. I think he is. I don't think he's a burner. He's probably a 4.48 to 4.51 kind of guy. So I don't think he's a burner, but he's a legitimate 6 foot and 220. And he is incredibly balanced, incredibly quick and light on his feet. As far as vision is concerned, like he is unbelievable at keeping his feet moving while letting blocks set up and then just bursting. That initial burst, that initial explosiveness is absolutely there. His eyes don't stop working when he gets to the second level. So he's always, and he has gotten better about trying to stay inside. I think early in the season, he was trying to bounce everything to the boundary, And I think I see a good improvement as the season goes on, where he's legitimately trying to find cuts back to the inside and stay north and south. Contact balance, he has the second most yards after contact in the country to Ashton Janti. I think he's a smooth receiver. I think he's got some really good hands. They don't target him a lot, but when he is targeted. I think he's got some really nice, soft hands. It's hard to poke a hole in this guy's game other than long speed and breakaway speed. I think he's got everything else. He can make guys miss in a phone booth. The open field, he's not going to make guys miss, but that's not really his game anyway. Like, he doesn't have that agility or fluidity to just put his foot in the ground and make a cut. But I do think he's a smooth athlete, and he can make his frame thinner to where, like, he kind of sidesteps contact, you know, and falls forward for an extra 2 or 3 yards. So I'm all aboard the Caleb Johnson hype train right now. So I'm going to daft this so hard, but I'm not even going to get to Penn State because I know that you're potentially on the other end of this and you want to talk about somebody over there. So I'll cut my conversation off there by drafting it by saying Caleb Johnson's the best back in the Big Ten.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about Allen at Penn State. No. He's not a part of this conversation.
He might run a 4.7.
Yeah, and I think he'll be drafted. But yeah. The one thing that I do want to acknowledge is – high school rankings, and I hate to do this, but Nicholas Singleton was a 5-star, mm-hmm. and Johnson was not. Caleb Johnson was a 3-star, mm-hmm. and one of them plays at Penn State and has I've heard, and I know that it's something that Jordan Reed talked about. Singleton is RB2 for a lot of teams, or was RB2 for a lot of teams. Now, I am right on the fence. They are so close to me between Johnson and Singleton because I think that they do different things well. First of all, Singleton is a dude in pass pro. He wants all of the smoke. He is a very physical guy. He mm-hmm. plays on a team that runs a lot more gap man style rushes. And I think that our eyes want to watch zone runners. I think we enjoy watching zone runners more because there is more nuance to what they are seeing and what they are reacting off of compared to a man gap guy. I think it's an easier transition to be a zone runner going into a scheme that runs more man stuff. And I think that's partially why we're seeing like the McVay tree run more gap stuff. But I think when you look at body type, about the same. I think Singleton is a little bit thicker. I think that he is more explosive, not too much more explosive, but like I think he's like 4.45 and mm-hmm. Johnson's like 4.50. So I think he'll test a little bit better. He's also coming from Penn State, so he might like run a 4.39 just because it's Penn State. But I do think that they are neck and neck for me. They're different players. I talked about it on Twitter when I first watched Johnson. His feet to me are it's art in the backfield. It's art. It's like he is running the ladder, but there's no connection between his brain and what he's seeing and his feet. His feet seem to have one brain that they share, and the rest of the body goes off of the brain in his head because his feet are I don't know if I've ever seen somebody's feet do what his do.
Yeah.
It is just exactly where his feet need to be for him to find just the smallest crease in that wide zone to sneak through. And like you said, I'm glad you brought it up. Getting skinny and getting through holes is something I think he does really well. Whereas Singleton will be a little bit more of a bruiser and just kind of put his shoulder down. These are the slight differences between the two. I don't necessarily have a preference right now because I haven't put them through my numerical grading scale yet. I am going to daft this. I think it will be Singleton, but I think that there is a very good chance you put Johnson in one of these zone schemes and he is one of the 5 to 7 most productive backs in the NFL within 2 or 3 seasons.
Yeah. I mean, I can't argue a whole lot. I think the larger picture of this after draft is to also give us an opportunity to talk about the Ohio State running backs that came in with a lot of hype that just the tape isn't there. With Judkins even coming into the season at Ole Miss, like I didn't see RB like a top 50 running back off of his Ole Miss tape either. Again, I just think he's a tighter runner than people give him credit for. Like he's almost exclusively a linear back. exclusively a linear back. And he looks like the best running back in the country when he's got nothing but green grass in front of him. But if not, it's a little bit of a difficult process for him to find some green grass.
So I just quickly went through kind of the running backs here. I don't know. There might be 6 or 7 running backs go before one of the Ohio State guys go. Hampton.
Okay.
Gordon, but probably not. Singleton.
Uh-huh.
Giddens.
Oh, Giddens.
Sampson. Johnson.
Dylan Sampson's a dude too. That's gonna be a guy to talk about.
I know.
I really struggle to evaluate his eyes because they do space the field out so much, and he's always running into five man boxes.
It's
Tennessee, so that's a little bit tough to evaluate vision and patience and kind of those things because it's like, well, it's 5-on-5. You find a hole and you just run through it. Hampton is interesting, predominantly because he can't run in this zone scheme, like at all. Like it's almost similar to Damian Pierce at Houston. Like if Damian Pierce is on the field for the Texans, you know they're not running zone. You just absolutely know they're not running zone. And so he's kind of a tailback where it's like, okay, kind of Javonte Williams the same way. Like Denver tried to make him a zone back and he's terrible at it. Like
That's why he didn't do it in North Carolina either.
Right. And so like either they're gonna try to force him to develop some zone eyes and it's gonna go really poorly. Or it's going to be the Damian Pierce situation in Houston where NFL teams are just going to know, okay, they're either throwing the ball here and he's pass protecting or they're running gap power.
Yeah.
So that's something with Hampton that makes me a little bit weary. Like, is he really going to go as high as people think he is? But yeah, there could be a legitimate chance that 7 backs are off the board before we get to those Ohio State guys.
Yep. Well, we've almost talked for a half an hour. I think
we have
pretty good to go.
I think so too.
We stayed late for the last one anyways, so I think we're good. Tomorrow, we are going to build an edge rusher.
Yeah, we're not using Nick Scorton's body type, that's for sure.
No, definitely not. I have been watching so many edge rushers the past 2 days. I'm going to watch even more guys tomorrow. I want to build a unique Frankenstein pass rusher for you guys tomorrow. I am super excited for this one because pass rushers are some of the most fun to talk about. I mean, if we're being honest, it's a class filled with a bunch of DPRs. So who's going to get the call for bend? Who's going to get the call for length? I think we kind of know who it's going to be, but anyways, that's all I got. Corey, do you have anything to add before we get out?
I think that's it as well. Again, we're going to be getting to some fun stuff here because, again, final reports are starting to be written. So for some of these seniors, for some of these underclass we know are going to declare, like we can start writing some of these reports. So just kind of sifting some of those guys who are injured and aren't going to play again the rest of the year, we can write some of these reports. So we're going to start being able to build a board here and talk about that and kind of do some fun exercises off of that as well. So I'm really excited about the direction of this podcast.
Agreed. And then we also have another pretty decent college football slate that we will talk about for Friday. So make sure you guys tune in. Thank you for being here for Daft or Draft on the Daft on Draft podcast. I am Dalton. He is Corey. I love you. Goodbye.